Before we start today's show, we want to share some exciting news from the Radiotopia family. Normal Gossip is back for its sixth season. If you've ever found yourself eavesdropping on strangers' juicy conversations and maybe wanting to chime in too, this show is for you. On Normal Gossip, host Kelsey McKinney shares the juiciest gossip sent in by listeners all around the world, then brings in a special guest to weigh in on the actions within the story. The stories are everything from petty to bizarre to downright strange. Fun fact, you might recognize a few of this season's guests from the Radiotopia universe. So check it out. New episodes start April 17th. Listen to Normal Gossip wherever you get your podcasts. Radio Diaries is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Radiotopia.
From PRX.
From PRX's Radiotopia, this is Radio Diaries. I'm Joe Richman.
So because of these very impelling reasons against my running, I have decided that I shall.
In this episode, the first installment of our three-part series, Contenders, portraits of some of the most groundbreaking and unusual presidential candidates who never won the White House. If Hillary Clinton wins in November, she'll become the first female president in American history. Of course, you already knew that. What you may not know is just how many women have applied for that job before. More than 35 women have run for president of the United States. Today, we're telling the story of three of them. And we begin almost 150 years ago. Victoria Woodhull was many things. A businesswoman, a clairvoyant, an advocate for women's rights and sexual freedom, and a magnet for media attention. And in 1872, at a time when most women couldn't even vote, Woodhull became the first woman in American history to run for president.
My name is Scott Claflin, and I am a descendant of Victoria Claflin Woodhull. The first time I began to become aware of my relative was in 1964, when the Republican Senator Margaret Chase Smith was running for President of the United States.
Senator Smith, posing now for the photographers, wearing her traditional robes, looking very happy and very pleased about the whole thing.
They were talking about history being made, with Margaret Chase Smith being the first woman to run for president. We're watching, and my dad said, "That's not right. These guys don't know what they're talking about."
My name is Amanda Friskin, and I wrote the book Victoria Woodhull's Sexual Revolution. Woodhull came from an unusual family, the Claflins. She grew up in a small town in Ohio, but they moved a lot, kind of traveling salesman, catch-as-catch-can. And at the age of 14, Woodhull was married off by her parents to a man who proved to be an alcoholic, and she had a pretty hard life with him. She was traveling around when she said she had a revelation to go out there and declare her right to be a woman in public and to be a powerful woman. And so she packed up and came to New York.
This was an era where a woman could not vote, could not enter a restaurant, a store, an establishment of any kind unless she was escorted by a man. It was controversial for women to do anything. But she had the foresight not to accept the way society was.
She started a radical newspaper. She opened the first woman's stock brokerage firm. But the thing that gave her national fame was when she sent a card to the New York Herald declaring her candidacy for the presidency.
Letter to the New York Herald, April 2nd, 1871. I claim the right to speak for the unenfranchised woman of the country and announce myself as a candidate for the presidency.
For a woman at that moment to be running for president, when most women in the country couldn't even cast a ballot, made this a pretty extreme act.
If the men should see the women going to the polls.
In the 19th century, lots of women were making claims about women's rights. You might think that women suffragists turned to Woodhull, and some of them did. But the suffragists in the 1870s tended to be middle class to upper middle class women, more conventional, more serious. Woodhull was really an outsider, not well educated, rather uncouth. And some of them just thought she was insane.
Though all the men should frown on us when going to the polls.
The thing that really made Woodhull notorious was when she gave a speech in New York City on November 20th, 1871, entitled The Principles of Social Freedom. In that speech, she claimed marriage was a form of tyranny for women.
It is high time that your sisters and daughters should no longer be led to the altar like sheep to the shambles. The sexual relation must be rescued from this insidious form of slavery. I protest.
She was speaking, and a woman yelled out and said, "Do you believe in free love?" And she said, "Yes, I believe in free love."
Yes, I am a free lover. I have an inalienable, constitutional, and natural right to love whom I may, to change that love every day if I please, and neither you nor any law you can frame have any right to interfere.
She was really just making a rhetorical point in the middle of a much more complicated speech. But that's the one that everyone put in the paper. It became known as her free love speech. It gave her instant national fame, but not necessarily the kind that she had hoped for.
1872, she was nominated by the Equal Rights Party at a convention in New York City.
It was very easy for the press to lampoon this. They thought it was ridiculous.
About 800 members of the Woodhull Wing assembled yesterday morning at Apollo Hall. The exercises were opened by the singing of Hail Columbia, after which a frivolous and tedious discussion on irrelevant topics arose.
The Equal Rights Party advocated women's rights to fair wages in the workplace, shorter work days, and they also advocated civil rights for freedmen and women. And when the discussion over the vice presidency came up, they nominated probably the most well-known African-American man at the time, Frederick Douglass. But they didn't ask him first, and he never accepted the nomination. He felt that it was probably wiser not to dignify the nomination with a response. The convention was really the high point for Woodhull, and after that, things really went downhill for her. As a result of the notoriety of the nomination, Woodhull was evicted from her home, and she had some trouble making ends meet. She then lashed out at a former ally, Henry Ward Beecher, who was a very prominent minister, saying that he wouldn't support the free love cause, he wouldn't support social freedom publicly, that he was a coward for not doing that because everyone knows Beecher is privately practicing free love, that he had dozens of mistresses, and she then decided to publish the story. That didn't help her situation. It made it a lot worse.
She was arrested for sending obscenities through the mail under laws that no longer exist, the Comstock laws. And on election day, she sat in jail.
Woodhull wasn't on the ballot anywhere on the election of 1872. So in terms of actual voting numbers, we have no record that anyone voted for Woodhull. She was a woman who has a terrible reputation, who may have at least temporarily done the cause more harm than good, but she's the first woman to put her name out there and say, "I want to run for president." It makes for a very complicated founding narrative for women. You want someone really beyond reproach. You want the George Washington for women. And you don't get that with Woodhull. She was a flawed first, but she's still the first. I mean, she's the one we have to live with.
Now we're going to fast forward a century to meet the so-called Lady of Maine. The political career of Margaret Chase Smith began when she worked as a secretary for her husband, Congressman Clyde Smith. She won election to Congress after his death and then joined the Senate in 1948. And then in 1964, Smith became the first woman from a major party to run for president. The Republican senator ran as a staunch hawk, an expert on national defense, while she handed out muffin recipes at campaign stops.
There are those who make the contention that no woman should ever dare to aspire to the White House, that this is a man's world, and that it should be kept that way.
My name is Janann Sherman, and I wrote the book No Place for a Woman, A Life of Senator Margaret Chase Smith.
My name is Merton Henry, and in 1964, I worked on the Margaret Chase Smith presidential campaign.
Margaret Chase Smith was born in a little town in central Maine called Skowhegan. Her mother struggled working in the shoe factory, working as a waitress and so forth. So it was not an easy life, and I think that was the basis for a lot of Margaret's ambition, that she didn't want to end up like her mother had. She had better ideas for herself.
She was the first woman ever elected to the Senate in her own right. She was very much a middle-of-the-road Republican who really followed her own instincts on things.
She definitely was seen by 1964 as a hawk.
It does not pay to play footsie with the communists.
She was probably the only woman in 1964 that had the stature to be a serious candidate for president.
It is contended that I should not run for president because the odds are too heavily against me for even the most remote chance of victory.
In January 1964, Margaret Chase Smith was scheduled to make a regular speech to the Women's Press Club.
Third, it is contended that as a woman, I would not have the physical stamina and strength to run. So because of these very impelling reasons against my running, I have decided that I shall.
So that was the opening shot.
Margaret, Margaret.
Senator Margaret Chase Smith of Maine, the first woman to announce a serious bid for the White House, who will enter the New Hampshire presidential primary on March 10th.
Oh, all out for Margaret, the senator from the wonderful state of Maine.
She campaigned in Illinois, she campaigned some in Oregon, she campaigned in small towns before Rotary clubs. She drove both places by car.
She would not accept campaign contributions, so she had no money, no poll workers, no buttons, no bumper stickers. Goldwater and Rockefeller, her opponents, were both millionaires. So I think she decided to take the moral high ground by saying, you don't have to be a millionaire to be president of the United States.
From Washington, D.C., Senator Margaret Chase Smith, Republican of Maine, will face the nation.
She tried to get people to pay attention to her record, what she had done of substance, not the fact that she was a woman. But, of course, she was constantly asked that. I mean, it's the very first thing that people see.
Senator Smith, not all countries have the same attitudes towards women as the United States. How do you think a woman president of the United States would make out in international conferences and those so-called nose-to-nose meetings?
Well, I would remind you that once there was Catherine the Great. I would remind you that there was Queen Victoria. I would also call your attention to Mr. Khrushchev's references to me through the years, when he called me an Amazon warmonger hiding behind a rose.
Well, how do you think you would make out in a kitchen confrontation with Mr. Khrushchev?
Well, I wouldn't care to estimate that. If it was making blueberry muffins, I probably would win.
We are well aware of that, Senator, from having sampled them.
She was always having to walk that tightrope between being strong enough and tough enough to be commander-in-chief, to run a country, but still feminine enough and ladylike enough, because being feminine was absolutely essential. And so she tried to balance it the best way she knew how.
Leave it to the girl where there's a frill.
She was always meticulously dressed. She was very careful about her appearance and everything.
She would tell Time magazine that nothing clears her mind like vacuuming, or pose with a mixing bowl, or primping in a mirror. That was a favorite. Senator Smith had a campaign song called Leave It to the Girls.
We'll wear perfume and pearls, be diplomatic in pin curls.
The response from the press was not pretty. One of the pundits said that a woman could be president just as long as she didn't act like one.
To the girls.
The press never treated her as if she had a realistic shot at it.
Good afternoon. This is the Republican National Convention at the Cow Palace in San Francisco. Before this day is out, the nominee of the Republican Party will have been determined.
I am now proud and honored to nominate the senior senator from the great Republican state of Maine, Senator Margaret Chase Smith.
You know, she knew at that point that she was not going to get the nomination, to say the least. Goldwater had the nomination pretty much sewed up.
And there it is. Senator Barry Goldwater is the Republican Party's nominee for the presidency of the United States.
The standard is, if you're the loser and you don't have enough delegates to swing it, well, then you very graciously release your delegates to vote for other candidates. But Senator Smith never released them. And the total of the 27 votes that she got on the floor, she hung on to, denying Barry Goldwater the unanimous vote for the nomination. So she came in second.
The tumult and the shouting has died. Senator Margaret Chase Smith, the lady from Maine, has emerged from her precedent-breaking bid for the presidency with even greater stature and reputation. Let's get around to this. You made some history, lovely lady, in being the first woman ever nominated.
Yes, it's quite a satisfaction today to think about.
Why do it at all? People run because they want to prove a point. They run because they want to make a statement. They run because they've got an oversized ego or something. There are all sorts of reasons that people run for president, even though they may know they have little chance of winning. Her reason was to prove that a woman could be a serious presidential candidate. And she did. She proved it.
Will we see a woman elected president of the United States during our lifetime? Perhaps not so wild a dream. The world is changing rapidly. Politics change with it. Many of the once impossible things have happened. Time alone will tell if a woman will someday break the tradition that only men can hold that office.
So all out for Margaret, and we'll win.
Just a few years after Margaret Chase Smith ran for president, Shirley Chisholm became the first African-American woman elected to the U.S. Congress. And then in 1972, she became the first black woman to run for president. Chisholm's campaign slogan was, "Unbossed and Unbought."
My name is Barbara Lee. In 1972, I was a student on public assistance, single mom, when I first met Shirley Chisholm. I now am a member of Congress serving on the Appropriations Committee. Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm told me, no matter what I did in life, use your power judiciously, use it with humility, but use it.
I stand before you today as a candidate for the Democratic nomination for the presidency of the United States of America.
Direct from our newsroom in New York, this is the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite.
A new hat, rather a bonnet, was tossed into the Democratic presidential race today, that of Mrs. Shirley Chisholm, the first black woman to serve in Congress.
My name is Robert Gottlieb. In 1972, I was on the campaign of Shirley Chisholm. The people running were Richard Nixon on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, there was George McGovern, John Lindsay, Senator Scoop Jackson, Governor George Wallace. And then you have Shirley Chisholm, and it was like she came from Mars.
I am not the candidate of Black America, although I am black and proud. I am not the candidate of the women's movement of this country, although I am a woman, and I'm equally proud of that. I am the candidate of the people. And my presence before you now symbolizes a new era in American political history.
She looked different. She sounded different. She had a lisp, plus she had an accent. She was from the Caribbean. She sounded funny, but all of that became totally secondary once you heard what she had to say.
I'm finding all over America that people are sick and tired of the Tweedledee-Dees and the Tweedledee-Dums who constantly flip-flap from one side to another. People are interested in having candidates that are truthful, candidates that have, if you will, just a tiny bit of morality and a tiny bit of integrity, and people that they believe they can go to sleep at night and know that they're not selling them out or selling out the communities in which they live.
She was against the Vietnam War. She talked about the elimination of poverty and why we needed to put resources into public education.
The black vote will play a large part in the Democratic presidential primary in California next Tuesday. The two men, plus a third candidate, Representative Shirley Chisholm, are going after those black votes.
Vote for Shirley Chisholm. Give me a vote, because I need strength. If I have the strength, we can get the input.
She knew that, you know, she was not going to pull the traditional voters. But she also knew there were so many people unregistered and out there just waiting to participate and waiting to vote.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I conclude by saying, if you can't support me or you can't endorse me, get out of my way. You do your thing and let me do mine.
The thing about Shirley Chisholm, she wasn't just a radical politician mouthing off. She understood how politics worked and how to get her positions heard by a wider audience.
ABC News originally had invited Senator McGovern and Senator Humphrey, the two leading candidates for the Democratic presidential nomination, to appear on this program. Friday night, the Federal Appeals Court ruled that Mrs. Chisholm must also be invited to participate.
She could make a million speeches while all these white guys are running for president. Nobody was going to listen to her. Nobody was going to cover it unless she was a candidate for president, unless in one of the debates she could force her way onto the stage.
If your own candidacy for the top spot should fail, are you now saying that you think you could serve as vice president of the United States?
I could serve as president of this country, believe it or not.
Well, I phrased my question badly.
That's what you're a candidate for.
Let me go back
and try. That's why I'm running.
Let me go back and try it again.
Will the convention of the Democratic Party please come to order?
I was a Shirley Chisholm delegate on welfare, first time voting, you know, now delegate at a convention. I mean, that was unheard of.
There are those in this hall who feel the Democratic Party has, for much too long, been in the control of middle-aged squares. Others who feel the party is being turned over to the hippies. 4 years ago, there were people out in the streets in Chicago protesting what was happening inside the hall, demanding some of the power. This time, 4 years later, they are inside, and they have some of the power. Well, that's the kind of convention we're about to have, and we'll see what happens.
Balloting will continue until a nominee is selected. The clerk will call the roll.
Illinois, New York.
Once it became clear she was not going to get over the top in the number of delegates, we hoped we were going to be able to go in the back room and trade off our delegates for certain promises to affect what the Democratic Party would stand for. And I guess the disappointment that we all had was by the time we reached the convention, we just didn't have enough power.
Now we see the beginnings of a very powerful movement in this country, a movement that has only realized its potential power.
Congressman Ron Dellums from California was somebody who she was very close with. He was going to nominate Shirley Chisholm on the floor of the convention, but he made a determination that he could only go so far as a matter of principle with Shirley Chisholm, and he backed out.
I therefore am now endorsing the candidacy of Senator George McGovern.
It really broke Shirley Chisholm's heart that people who supported her positions ultimately decided, you know what, I love you, Shirley, but I'm going to go and support George McGovern because that's reality.
Senator George H. McGovern, having received a majority vote of this convention certified delegate.
Shirley was a very practical politician, and she knew what had to be done had to be done. And you know, she would say, but we've got to keep going. We've got to keep working. We've got to fight. Nothing is easy.
I think every politician always has a dream that they could win, but there is no way Shirley Chisholm ever thought she would actually win the nomination or be president of the United States. But by the end of the campaign, people were no longer saying that she had no right to run.
I stand before you today to repudiate the ridiculous notion that the American people will not vote for a qualified candidate simply because he is not white or because she is not a male. I do not believe that in 1972 the great majority of Americans harbor such narrow and petty prejudices. All of you who share this vision, from New York to California, from Wisconsin to Florida, our brothers and sisters on the road to national unity and a new kind of America.
You've been listening to part one of our series, Contenders. Stay tuned this summer for more portraits of America's most original presidential candidates who never won. Contenders is produced by me, Joe Richmond, with Samara Freemark, Nellie Gillis, Sarah Kate Kramer, and edited by Deborah George and Ben Shapiro. Radio Diaries is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, the public radio exchange. Radiotopia is a network of 14 great shows. To listen, go to radiotopia.fm. We're supported by the Knight Foundation, MailChimp, the National Endowment for Humanities, and our recently formed super PAC, Make Radio Great Again. I'm Joe Richmond of Radio Diaries. Thanks for listening.
Radiotopia. From PRX.